behind the back, wrap around, and climbing the ladder is Dante Hall.
Sexton. Step back. Good! Patty at three. Oh, he's a flamethrower! What a shot! 6-3 to the win! It's good! It's good! It's good! Colin Sexton made the floater! They'll review it! But oh, mercy! Colin Sexton may have saved the season!
Tigers set to trigger it in. Smart gets it into Watford. Threw it away. He'll run it down to the backcourt. Hugh will take it to the top of the arc. Watford three at the buzzer, blocked by Herb. The putback, no. The buzzer sounds. And Bama hangs on. Oh, my goodness.
Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast, your source for all things Alabama basketball. And I'm your host, Jordan Harper, head basketball analyst of Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network. You can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24, where you'll find all Alabama basketball news, updates, especially recruiting. Transfer portal is going hot right now, so don't miss any of the information there. Go follow me on Twitter or the X, whatever you call it. And what a great first-round game for Alabama in the NCAA tournament. They defeat the College of Charleston 109-96. And folks, if you didn't watch the game, if you were living under a rock, if you were working night shift, this wasn't even that close. Okay. Alabama won 109-96. And at one point, with about 5 minutes left in the game, they were up 100-74. And after that, 100-71, I can go all the way back to 5 minutes and 8 seconds left, 100-74, and that's when Alabama took out their starters and had nothing but backups in. They eventually put in the walk-ons, and Charleston ended up making a 25-9 run at that point, or 22-9 run, excuse me, and to kind of make it look closer than what it was. It was never close once Alabama kind of pulled ahead. They ended up being up 17 points at halftime. And early on, College of Charleston was hitting shots. They were hitting really tough twos. Alabama's defense was playing great. And Alabama was pretty much matching them bucket for bucket. Charleston ended up leading 19-13 early in the game. And it was just an up-and-down affair, exactly what everyone thought it would be. And it was also the reason why everybody knew that it was a great draw for Alabama, because they were basically playing a lesser version of themselves. So they've been prepared to play a team like Charleston all season due to practicing against themselves. And Charleston didn't have the athletes. They didn't have the speed, probably didn't have the stamina that Alabama does. So you knew if Alabama could just hang in there early on and get hot from three, then Alabama would end up pulling away. And lo and behold, that's what happened. Alabama got a huge game from Mark Sears with 30 points on 9 of 13 shooting. He was so efficient. He was so good. And I thought he was good defensively, too, after a rough opening 3 or 4 minutes on the defensive end. So we can kind of break down the stats, see where Alabama got their edge. There are multiple areas where Alabama edged out Charleston that really made this a blowout game for the Crimson Tide. But there were also some teaching moments that Alabama has that the coaching staffs, you know, will definitely harp on in the after the game. So looking at it, Alabama shot 60% from the field. That is an absurdly high number. Alabama never shoots that well from the field. They shot 36 of 60 overall. College of Charleston, they shot 32 of 78 for 41%. The reason they had so many shots was because they had so many offensive rebounds. And we'll kind of touch on that here in a second. Alabama shot 56% from three. They also never shoot over 50% from three ever. So this was a really good game for Alabama shooting the ball. They shot 13 of 23, while Charleston really, really struggled until the very end where they started hitting everything. They shot 10 of 33, but at one point they were 2 of 19 from 3. Free throw line, Alabama shot 8 more free throws. Did not shoot well from the line at all, 24 of 37 for 64%, and Charleston 22 of 29 for 75%. And here comes where Charleston really stayed in the game early on, and the reason why. They won the rebounding battle 42 to 34 and dominated the offensive rebounding battle 17 to 6. Now, I remember at one time, Charleston was up 9 to nothing in offensive rebounds, and their second chance points were insane. I believe they outscored Alabama 26 to 8 in terms of second chance points. So you have a team like College of Charleston that's not athletic. They're not high flyers. They just know where to be. They understand situation. They understand angles, and they really attack the rebound. And that's something that Alabama did not do. You just had a lot of Alabama players standing up, looking up at the sky, hoping that the ball comes to them so they can get the board and go. It wasn't really any sense of urgency. So give College of Charleston credit. They hung in the game with those second chance points. And first half, I think they ended up with 13 or 15 points second chance, and Alabama had 0. So that's really what kept this from being even a larger blowout. And it's a reason why I feel like Alabama's defense played really, really well. Charleston only had 71 points with 5 minutes to go, and then Alabama took out their starters. But with the amount of offensive rebounds they had, that lets you know the first shot defense was actually really good. They just could not end the possession, which you have to play all the way through the end of the possession, but it lets you know that Alabama's defense was actually really good on the first shot. They just have to clean up the boards. And, you know, in the SEC, they were one of the best rebounding teams in the league and one of the best rebounding teams in the country. I believe they were top 25 going into the tournament. So it might just be an outlier game, but that's something that Alabama definitely has to work on next game. Turnovers, it was tied 10-10. Points in the paint, Alabama won that 46-40. Here's where one place that Alabama really dominated, and that was fast break points, 25-10. Now, College of Charleston plays fairly fast. They want to have quick possessions. They want to play exactly how Alabama does, except in the one area that Alabama really, really flourishes, and that's fast breaking and transition. Charleston can't run with Alabama. It was clearly obvious going into the game and during the game that Alabama just wore Charleston down with running after every single possession. You could tell after every rebound, after every made shot by Charleston, they were getting in. They were going. They were not going to let Charleston dictate the pace at all. And that's one way that Alabama got Charleston probably dead-legged, tired leg shooting those threes, and that's why they were 2 of 18 at one point from three-point land. But Alabama really played their style. Charleston never got them out of it, and that's why everybody knew that this was a great draw for Alabama. And I didn't understand why some people were picking Charleston to win. Teams can't beat Alabama at their own game. The closest thing would be Florida, but Florida is even a different team personnel-wise than Alabama, where they dominate around the rim and they have some guards that can shoot the three. They like to play fast too, don't get me wrong, but it's a different setup and kind of a different way to play. College of Charleston tries to play the way Alabama does. They just don't have the dudes to do it. And that's something that if Charleston's going to win a game in the tournament, they are going to have to recruit differently instead of having, you know, a few big guys that are not athletic, not quick. That's good for their conference, but not when you're going up against a Power 5 team from the SEC like Alabama. Now, Alabama had their largest lead of 31 points to kind of give you an idea, and that was in the second half, halfway through the second half. To kind of give you an idea of how dominant this game truly was, and it's not even close to the 13-point final score that it shows. And Charleston led 19-13, and then after that, they never led again. So let's kind of go into the box score, see who had a great game, which Alabama had multiple players who I thought had great games. Obviously leading off with Mark Sears with 30 points on 9 of 13 shooting. He hit 3 of 6 threes, missed a couple free throws, and finished 9 of 11 from there. But he had 5 assists, 4 rebounds, and what a great game from Sears. He was aggressive from the jump. He was taking it right to College of Charleston's players, whether it be in fast break or just in the half court. He was taking it right to the rim, and he's so strong for a smaller guard. He's got such broad shoulders, and he's a bigger body guard. So he can just power up through contact and either get the foul call or maneuver his way to making the layup. And that's something that he did all night, and Charleston had no answer for it. One play that really stuck out to me that let me know that nobody on Charleston could guard Sears was right before the end of the half. They spread it out. They ISO'd Mark Sears on the guy that was guarding Sears, and just blew right by him. I mean, it was nothing. It was one, basically like in football terms, it was a hitch and go. I mean, faked right, went left. I mean, you never let Mark go left. Let him go left easily and got to the rim at ease and made the layup to end the half to put him up 17. Mark Sears was. From an Alabama player in the NCAA tournament in a while, probably since John Felix against Marquette back in 2006. Next, you had Latrell Reitzel, and it was so good to have him healthy. Even though he left with a little bit of health scare, ended up being just a bloody nose, and I was afraid about his head injury he had, that he might have, you know, re-aggravated that. But he ended up with just a bloody nose, but also with 17 points on 6 of 8 shooting, 5 of 6 from 3. So he had 5 of the 13 three-pointers that Alabama's made for the entire game. And he was absolutely brilliant. The way he was moving off ball to get open, the way that they were scheming ways to get Latrell open. And he played in transition super effectively to where he knew exactly where he was going to go and guys found him. And he hit 2 transition threes that were just beautiful. And that looks exactly like what Alabama basketball looked like when they were, you know, projected to be a number 2 seed earlier in the year in February, early February, late January, when everybody was healthy. And this is the first time that Alabama's been healthy since February 17th, where there were no minutes restrictions or anything. So you had Reitzel that had 17 points, Aaron Estrada, who's playing an old team of his from his old conference when he was with Hofstra. You could tell he started off forcing things. He was trying layups that he had no angle at, he had no chance of making. I don't know if he was trying to prove a point or, you know, his adrenaline was just going too high. But he finished with 13 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds. Just an all-around great game from him. 6 of 14 shooting, so he wasn't efficient after he started. I believe 0 for 3 or 0 for 4 from the field. He really settled in after that. He came out of the game, and I think Nate Oates probably settled him down. And then he came in, and he was more of letting the game come to him, and it sure did. He made an impact in a lot of ways because – when Alabama couldn't rebound, you knew Aaron Estrada, who led the team in rebounds with 7, was going to stick his head down there and grab a rebound. Alabama's guards rebound so well because you had the 3 leading rebounders for the team behind Muhammad Diabate and Muhammad McGee. Aaron Estrada with 7. Latrell Reitzel with 4. Mark Sears with 4. And then Diabate and McGee had 4. If Alabama's forwards would rebound like their guards do, they would have won this game they could have named their score, really. But it's great that Alabama has guards that are willing to rebound. but Alabama needs more from Grant Nelson, who ended up with one rebound. Nick Pringle ended up with two rebounds. Like, you have to have more rebounds from guys like that if they're going to play the four and the five spot majority of the time. I mean, Grant Nelson only played 15 minutes this game. He struggled offensively. He had one great alley-oop dunk from Aaron Estrada on transition. But outside of that, defensively, he wasn't great. Offensively, he wasn't great. He was not rebounding the ball. He was 1 of 4 from the free throw line. Just very uncharacteristic of Grant. Especially against a team I thought he probably should have dominated. He finished, missed his first shot, which was from three. I don't like him taking his first shot from three. I like him kind of easing into the game, take some early twos, easy twos, see it go through the basket, and then let the game come to him. And if there's an open three in rhythm, he's really good with threes off of assists. Rylan Griffin, I thought, had a really solid game. He didn't contribute anywhere stat-wise, rebound, assists, but he did finish with 9 points. And I thought he played really good defense majority of the time. They had a guy that would hit threes from the hash, or at one point he hit it from where Nate Oates was standing on Alabama's bench. But Rylan Griffin, he played about as good a defense on a team that has a bunch of different guys that can be threats from outside, inside, driving, that you could have asked for. Him and Muhammad Diabate were just the lockdown guys that Alabama needed this game to step up, and they did. So kudos to Rylan Griffin. He showed up offensively as well as defensively. And while he only played 20 minutes, he made a huge impact in those 20 minutes he played. Just kind of brushing through the bench, Muhammad Diabate finished with 6 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 steals. I mean, this was a really great showing from him. I mean, he played 18 minutes while some are with the backups at the very end of the game, but I thought he played longer minutes when he came in the first half and early second half. But if he's going to make an impact like that, you have to play him. You have to play him, even if it's in short spurts. You have to play him in multiple short spurts. He doesn't give you anything offensively unless he's around the rim. But defensively, there's no secret. I mean, he made a steal on an inbounds pass on the sideline and took it all the way in for a dunk. I mean, it looked like Herb Jones-esque type steal of just faking one shoulder and going the other one and stealing it when they passed it to that shoulder, stole it and went in for a dunk. It was a beautiful play that, you know, you haven't seen much from Alabama players this year defensively. So you need some of that tenacity on the court, especially against a team like Charleston. I thought Jaren Stevenson played his best game in a while. He had 7 points, hit 2 threes. I mean, they were beautiful in-rhythm threes. And also had 2 blocks at the rim. Him and Grant Nelson pinned this dude's shot on the backboard at the same time. Jaren Stevenson got credit for the block, but I thought Stevenson played really well defensively too, along with Muhammad McGee, who had 6 points. Although he did, you know, have 4 fouls, he 6 points, 4 rebounds. I thought he affected some shots defensively. He got an offensive rebound and a putback, which is something that Alabama desperately needs from their big guys. So if Wiggy's going to give you a good 10 to 12 minutes a game, I mean, that only adds to Alabama's arsenal in the front court. They need bodies to play well, not foul, which Wiggy always finds himself in foul trouble. But if he can give some valuable minutes defensively and just get some offensive boards, or defensive boards at that matter, that would help Alabama out so much. Sam Walters had 9 points. Most of those came at the free throw line, and he hit 1 3-pointer near the end of the game, but he didn't play a whole lot either. He kind of got burned a couple times earlier in the game defensively, and I think Nate Oates sat him down and didn't play until the second half when the game was in hand. So what a win for Alabama. And we're going to kind of go through who they're going to play next, because they're going to get the winner of Grand Canyon and St. Mary's, which was played at what seemed like starting at midnight last night, local time here in Alabama. I don't think it got started till after 10. And no, I did not stay up for that. I had two kids. It's really hard sometimes to stay up that late, even though, you know, I'm recording this on Saturday morning at 7:30 because I fell asleep. But watching the highlights of the game, Grand Canyon won against St. Mary's with the upset, 75-66. The Lopes of Grand Canyon. And really, it wasn't close until the very end from what it looked like. After the first 6-7 minutes of the second half, Grand Canyon really took control of this game. They were up by 12 minutes left in the game. And I think it got down to somewhere between 5 and 6 with about 5 minutes left. And then Grand Canyon just never let them get close after that. So the champion of the Western Athletic Conference, the WAC, moves on to face Alabama in the round of 32 for a chance to go to the second weekend in the Sweet 16. So what does this mean for Alabama? Well, St. Mary's was going to be a really bad matchup for Alabama just because of the pace they play at. They are literally one of the bottom 5 tempo teams in the country. So they slow the pace down tremendously. And they're efficient offensively, and they're super good defensively. Super good. So when you look at them in KenPom, St. Mary's adjusted offense is 47, defense is 14. So that lets you know they're elite defensively, and their adjusted tempo is 357. Folks, there's only 362 teams in the country, and they're 357 in tempo. That does not bode well for Alabama. Alabama has to play their tempo, which, by the way, is it moved up to number 7 in the country after the game against College of Charleston. And we'll kind of go over their numbers here in a minute. But they play a wildly different pace. I thought St. Mary's was going to be a lot more difficult of a matchup for Alabama. And I thought people should be rooting for Grand Canyon to win. Although I said when I was breaking down the brackets, I thought Grand Canyon would win. I picked them to win because they are athletic. They do kind of like to play a quicker pace. They're not a great three-point shooting team. But man, they know how to win. We can kind of go through their schedule here. They played South Carolina really close earlier in the year, lost by 7. Beat San Francisco, which is a really solid team, by 4. Beat San Diego State by 6. Beat Liberty by 5. Beat Louisiana Tech by 3. I mean, they beat some really quality teams this year. When you go back and look at their non-conference schedule. So they're definitely not going to be a pushover. But kudos to Grand Canyon getting their first ever NCAA tournament win last night. Looking at the box score for that, Grand Canyon only shot 18 threes, made 5 of them, so only shot 27%. Rebounding-wise, one thing I wanted to look at was St. Mary's dominated the offensive board on Grand Canyon 14-6 and 40-34 overall. Fast break points, Grand Canyon won 12-5. Obviously, St. Mary's isn't going to score many fast break points. But outside of that, Grand Canyon was plus 21 from the free throw line. Plus 21. I want to say that again. St. Mary's fouled 21 times to Grand Canyon's 13. So Grand Canyon really did a good job of playing without fouling and made their free throws, 28 of 36. They did not shoot the ball well. St. Mary's defense will do that to you. But they also prevented St. Mary's from shooting the ball well either. So St. Mary's only shot 7 of 25 from 3, and 38% overall from the field. And they shot 18 more times than Grand Canyon, finished 26 of 67. Grand Canyon won the game 75 to 66. Still really early. Looking at some of the players that Alabama's going to have to deal with, Tyon Grant Foster, one guy that I really like coming into the tournament. He's a bigger guard. He's a senior. He's 6'7". He scored 22 points last night against St. Mary's, and he could have had more if he wasn't 8 of 14 from the free throw line. You got guys like Ray Harrison, another guard that they played, scored 17 points. Now, they don't get much contribution from their big guys, Duke Brennan and Gabe McLaughlin. Excuse me. That was a tongue twister. They only got 16 points out of those guys, and they don't get any contribution out of their bench. They're really only a 7-man rotation. They have two guys that will play 20-plus minutes off the bench. But outside of that, if you can get their starters in foul trouble, you're going to have them in the torture chamber. So that's one thing Alabama needs to do is draw a lot of fouls against their starters, get them in foul trouble, force them to play some of these backups that they don't feel comfortable playing. But Grand Canyon is going to be a handful for Alabama. Let's go look at some of their KenPom ratings. They're 50th in KenPom, which lets you know that they're better than some of the NCAA tournament teams such as Oregon, NC State, James Madison. They're 58th in adjusted offense. They're 41st in adjusted defense. Their tempo is still solid while it's kind of middle of the pack. It's 116, so they're not a team that likes to just slow it down, walk it up the court, take their sweet time. They like to get shots early in possessions too, which can be a detriment to them, taking bad shots. And I feel like if Alabama can just speed them up even more and make them play a track meet, that Grand Canyon's not going to be able to keep up, which, one, not many teams can keep up, maybe just a few with Alabama. But force Grand Canyon to take bad shots, force them into turnovers, because I don't think Grand Canyon can hang at that pace. Kind of looking at Grand Canyon's season statistics, they average 80 points a game. They shoot 34% from three, 75% from the free throw line, 46% from the field overall. They do average 12 turnovers a game, which is right there along with Alabama. So they turn the ball over a good bit as well. Average 5 blocks, 8 steals. Their leading scorer is Tyon Grant Foster, like I mentioned before. Him, Ray Harrison, and Gabe McLaughlin are the three guys that really carry them scoring-wise. So with all those guys being guards outside of Gabe, Alabama's backcourt is going to be put in tough situations the whole game on Sunday, which the game will be played Sunday night at 7 p.m. I believe that's – I can't remember if that's Eastern or Central time. But it's going to be a really tough game for Alabama. It's going to be 7 o'clock Eastern, so 6 o'clock Central time. So you're going to see Alabama – some backcourt be put in some tough situations with Grant Foster, with Harrison, because they're going to make them guard defensively. And Alabama opens as a 5.5-point favorite. The over-under is 168.5. Obviously, Alabama's not a huge favorite. They were a 9.5-point favorite. Got down to 8 against Charleston, which you saw how that turned out. But 5.5 points gives a lot of credit to Grand Canyon of being a very dangerous team, and rightfully so. They should be. They definitely should be. So this is going to be a really fascinating game. Alabama, I feel like, got lucky that Grand Canyon won against St. Mary's, because this is a lot more favorable matchup. Not saying that it's a slam dunk win for Alabama, but this is a lot more doable matchup than playing a team that's just going to grind you the whole game and make you force you to take late in the shot clock shots and not be able to get out and run. So Alabama plays Grand Canyon at 6 o'clock on Sunday night, and winner goes to the Sweet 16 to face the winner of UNC North Carolina and Michigan State, which will be a fascinating game today as well. I actually have a hunch that Michigan State might actually win that game tonight. But nonetheless, Alabama wins their first game against College of Charleston, dominated basically from start to finish. And what a great way to start out a tournament that hopefully Alabama will make a run in. But thank you for listening to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Harper, head basketball analyst of Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network. Find me on Twitter at HarperNation24. Please go follow me. Please like, subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast at. And until next time, I'll record again after the game on Sunday night. Adios.